Good evening, everybody. So we are now up to our second in the series of three, all about Erev Chatzeres. To date, we still have no idea where the Far Rockaway Lawrence Erev Chatzeres is hosted, which is a major, major problem. So we should try to find out where the Erev is hosted before this coming Shabbos. I'm sure it exists. Rabbi Pelkowitz, exactly. Rabbi Pelkowitz denied having it. So now, he said he doesn't have it. So now we need to go back to the drawing board and actually find out where it is. Okay. You ready? Okay, so before the Shabbos, someone should probably find out where the Erev is hosted. Yeah. Which brings us to another point. If it's in Rabbi Reisman's house and he's in Eretz Yisrael, then we hope that someone else has access to his house, because then it wouldn't help anyway. He's not part of the Vad. I don't know. That's way above my pay scale.
I was told it might be in this shul.
Might be in this shul? Oh, might be in the Agudah. Okay, so we'll have to find out. I just want to be makdim, if I may. It's a technicality, but it's something that's important to find out before Shabbos. Okay. If we may, I would just like to dedicate the shiur this evening to a very special person who passed away this week, Mr. Moshe David Cooperman. I don't know if anyone here knew who he was, but he was a very close friend of our family, and he never was able to have any biological children. But he was a tremendous Maiker Rabbanon. He was a tremendous Baal Tzedakah all over the world, literally. Yeshivas all over the world where he refused to have his name on them. And he really helped support tremendous institutions throughout the world in all different circles, in Hasidic, Yeshivish, Misnagdish, Litvish, everywhere. He was a really very special person. And being that he did not live and leave over any children, so we dedicate our Divrei Torah this evening to Rav Moshe David Cooperman. His neshama should have a tremendous aliyah in Gan Eden Shamayla, and he should be a Melitz Yosher on all of us. So the second in our series of Shiurim on Erev Chatzeros, I'll just want to recap the main points from last week, just so that we know what we're talking about. We gave a little bit of a hakdama about what Erev Chatzeros is all about. We began with what the different Rishuyas on Shabbos actually are. So Rishus number one is a Rishus HaRabim De'oraisa. And we said, Rishus HaRabim De'oraisa, most of the Rishonim understand, as it says clearly in Shulchan Aruch, Simen Shin Samach Dalet, a Rishus HaRabim De'oraisa pretty much is, if you have 600,000 people actually walking there every day, excuse me, and you also have a street which is 16 amos wide. That's the definition. What?
Riding.
What was that?
Walking.
Riding. What was that?
Walking.
No. If you have 600,000 people passing through a street, that would be considered a Rishus HaRabim De'oraisa. Many other qualifications that you need, but those are the two main ones that it says in Shulchan Aruch and Shin Samach Dalet. Therefore, most of our places nowadays are not really considered Rishus HaRabim De'oraisa, because it's very seldom that we find such a type of setup with 16 amas wide and 600,000 people passing through. So therefore, most of our cities would not be considered a Rishus HaRabim De'oraisa. If you do have a Rishus HaRabim De'oraisa, then an Eruv with a string and the Tzuras HaPesach would not help at all. The only way to make a Heter Tiltul in such a case where you have a Rishus HaRabim De'oraisa would be to actually put up a real wall. It has to be Mukaf Mechitzos, real Mechitzos. You have to put up real walls. And it has to be Dal Soseh Ne'ulas Balayla. You have to be able to close off the Rishus HaRabim at night, that the gates actually can be closed. So that is what would be the only way to be Matur a Rishus HaRabim De'oraisa. We said last week that there was a Rav who recently said, somebody asked him, what if the Eruv falls down on Shabbos? So he said, well, it's a Rishus HaRabim De'oraisa, you never let it carry in there in the first place, even with the Eruv. So that is a contradiction in terms. He's absolutely wrong, because if you have a Rishus HaRabim De'oraisa, then there is no such institution as an Eruv. The only time we have an institution of an Eruv is when it's not a Rishus HaRabim De'oraisa. So that's just a contradiction in terms. He was confusing, and let's make sure we have everything clear. So Rishus HaRabim De'oraisa, you cannot have an Eruv, you must have walls around it. Being that most of our cities are not Rishus HaRabim De'oraisa, so we're really dealing with a Karmelis Midrabanan, which means, on a level of De'oraisa, one is allowed to carry here, just Midrabanan, they said, this has a din like a Rishus HaRabim, and that is where we have this heter of putting up a string with the poles at Tzuras HaPesach. That is where we assume that at Tzuras HaPesach would be helpful. Now, We have our city, we have our community, which has the Tzuras HaPesach all around it, it has the string, and everything's up. We checked it before Shabbos, everything should be fine. Midaraisa, it's not a Rishus HaRabim. Midarabanan, it's a Rishus HaRabim, but we said that a Tzuras HaPesach helps. But now came along Shlomo HaMelech, like the Gemara tells us in Shabbos Davav, came along Shlomo HaMelech, and he made a whole new takana. Shlomo HaMelech said, we're concerned if you're going to have many different people living within this Tzuras HaPesach, living within one area, one apartment building, one city, one community, even though they're allowed to carry based on the Tzuras HaPesach that we put up. Still, Shlomo HaMelech was concerned, if you're going to allow me to carry into your house and him to carry into my house, we're concerned that maybe someone is going to confuse this with a real Rishus HaRabim, and he's going to think that one is allowed to carry in a Rishus HaRabim as well. So therefore, Shlomo HaMelech came along and told us that we have to do something new. We have to make an Erev Chatzeres. Now, what is an Erev Chatzeres? So the point of an Erev Chatzeres is, like it says in Siman Shin Samach Vav in Shulchan Aruch, the point of an Erev Chatzeres really is that everyone should be joined together and be considered as if we're living in one house over Shabbos. So most lechatchila would have been that every Shabbos, everyone should move out of their homes, move into the biggest mansion in the neighborhood, and then we're really considered like we're living in one simple house for Shabbos, and we're one big happy family. The problem is that we would not be one big happy family if all the neighbors moved into one house for Shabbos with all the children. That would obviously not work. So the second etza is that everyone should give some bread. Everyone should drop off a challah in one person's home. And then, just like we find by Erev Beit Chumen, that Pito Shel Adam is Koveya. Even though my house is here, but if I put down pas, if I put down food somewhere far away, I can extend my tchum because that's considered like my bias. My physical shvisa on Shabbos is considered like it's in the place of the food, not in the place of my real home. So the same way we find that over there, so too over here, we can say that the pas, if I drop off a roll in somebody's house, then it's considered as if I'm actually living in his house. So that's the second etzah. However, that's also not so practical, because who wants 1,001 rolls of challah in his house? No one's interested in such a thing. So therefore we went to etzah number 3, which is that one person buys a box of matzahs on behalf of the whole community, and then we say, Zachin la'adam shelo b'fanav. He picks it up, and he has somebody else be mezakeh on behalf of all the other neighbors in the town. And now this Erev Chatzeres is really owned b'shutvis by everybody, which means, one second, this means that now we are all considered as if we're living in his home because he has the box of matzahs on our behalf. That's that. So you're going to ask, what does that help? There are thousands of people living in Far Rockaway, Lawrence, Inwood, and wherever else our Erev Chatzeres extends to. So how can you tell me that one box of matzahs is going to be good enough for everybody? So we'll get to this in a second. We'll talk about what exactly is the sheer air of what do you need to be ma'ariv with for number one, an air of chatzeres, number two, air of tchumen, number three, an air of tafshilin. Yeah.
The whole point of the takana was so to be some sort of hacker. How is this a hacker? I mean, one guy goes and buys stuff, and no one knows that, no one knows anything. This
right.
Is a hacker, right?
And it's
like
a from confusing it with a Rishus HaRabim.
So really what's supposed to happen is, that's what I was saying, what's supposed to happen is, you're supposed to have a sign in the shul, in Teaneck, I know this is what they have. They have one area for the whole Teaneck, Pagoda, and Bergenfield. So it's a huge, it's probably the same as for Akwe Lawrence Inwood, let's say, I don't know. But it's a huge Erev Chatzeres, and everyone's being mishtal in one Erev Chatzeres, because it's good enough to have one box of matzahs for everybody. So they have a sign in all the shuls that says the Erev can be found in Rabbi Neuberger's home. This is where he lives. So this way, everybody really knows there is a hacker. Everybody has to know where the Erev Chatzeres really is. And that is for the purpose of what you're asking. That if we don't know where the Erev Chatzeres is housed, and if we don't know anything about it, then really, this is not really considered a hishtatvus between all of us. This is not a hacker. This is not going to help to get out of the problem that Shlomo HaMelech was concerned of. And therefore, most proper would be if we really knew, each and every family in the community really knew where the Erev was housed and how we can get into his house. So that's something to think about. Maybe we should raise that issue in our community as well. So now, let's move on to some new material. What is it that we need to put down for an actual Erev Chatzeres? So it says in Shulchan Aruch that for an Erev Chatzeres, one must use pas, one has to use bread or matzah as well. We'll see in a few minutes why we use matzah and not bread. But it has to be made from bread. Then when you come to an Erev Beit Chumen, so what's the halacha there? When I want to put Erev Beit Chumen in a certain location and I want that to be considered my bias for Shabbos, so what do I have to put down? So over there, we don't really have any restrictions of what type of food it has to be. All we find in the Gemara and Shulchan Aruch is that it has to be mazon shtei sudas. It has to be enough food for a person to actually eat two festive meals on Shabbos. So that would be considered my Erev Truman. And then we come to the third category of Erev Tavshilin. Already last week we were comparing and contrasting all three of these. And we'll do it a little more now. When we come to an Erev Tavshilin, so that's also a big discussion in the Gemara in the second parak in Beitza. The Gemara over there is talking about all the halachas of Erev Tavshilin. So the Gemara says, some Amaram held that it's not good enough if a person wants to bake on Yontif and he wants to cook on Yontif, so then it's not good enough to put a cooked item on the side for an Erev Tavshilin. You have to put a baked item and a cooked item. You have to put something which would be similar to the type of malacha of cooking that you want to do. So if I want to cook on Yontif, I have to leave over a cooked food for the Erev Tavshilin. If I also want to bake on Yontif, I have to leave over some baked goods for the Erev Tavshilin. So this is a big discussion in the Gemara. If ein ofen ela ala afui, must a person also have a baked item for his Erev Tavshilin, or is it good enough just to have a cooked item? So Rabbeinu Tam says in the Tosfos there on Daf Chaf Aleph that we assume that one needs both. One needs a cooked item, one needs a baked item. Now, anyone does that?
Yeah, matzah and egg.
Oh, so most people have a matzah and an egg, right? Correct. Most people have a matzah and an egg, which we'll talk about in a minute. Why a matzah and why an egg? So we'll see that in a second. So the Ri over there the Ri is the nephew of Rabbeinu Tam. So the Ri there takes issue with Rabbeinu Tam and he says, I don't agree with my uncle. Why does he come to that conclusion that one needs to, number one, have a cooked food and number two, have a baked food? He says, I really don't agree with his conclusion at all. I think it's good enough to have a cooked food. An egg would be good enough. And says the Ri, however, lo mil'ani libi laver al divrei dodi. I couldn't bring myself. I didn't have the heart to actually disagree, to argue with my uncle. And therefore the Ri writes that all the time that he was living in the community of his uncle, he decided that he was going to follow his uncle's psak. So therefore in Shulchan Aruch, we have the minhag that we try to be machmer for Rabbeinu Tam, and that's why we have, number one, a baked, and number two, a cooked item. Now, why do we have a beitza? Where does that come from? Why specifically an egg? So Aruch HaShulchan points out, in Siman Tav Kuf Chav Zayin, in Hilchos Yontif, so the Aruch HaShulchan says, this is not a halacha l'moshe misinai. There's no real reason why we need to have an egg. However, he says the reason for that is as follows. Because the Aruch HaShulchan is talking in a time when there was no refrigerators, and he was concerned that if a person is going to set aside his Erev Tavshilin, and it's going to be meat, for example, because that's the most chashuv of food that you have over Yontif, so why not use the most chashuv of food for the Erev Tavshilin, for the mitzvah? So Aruch HaShulchan said he was concerned, if you're going to put meat aside, sometimes by the time the third day rolls around, it's already going to be spoiled. A person's Erev Tavshilin is spoiled, considered like it's not food anymore, it's not edible, and therefore your Erev Tavshilin is out the window. So the Aruch HaShulchan suggests that that's why they had the practice of using a beitza specifically. That's something that will not spoil in the next 3 days. And that's why they had no concern with using an egg for an Erev Tavshilin. However, it would seem that nowadays we do have refrigerating systems and we do have ways to preserve our food. So the best would be to be ma'arev Erev Tavshilin with something which is more chashuv, to use the meat, to use the fancy foods for Yontif. That would be considered probably the best of ideas because we no longer have the old concern. Now, we have the practice that we are all mishtatev in a box of matzah. So how can you tell me that if I have 500 families, 1,000 families, all being mishtatev in an Erev, how can you tell me that everyone is considered a partial owner of this little box of matzah? So, that is absolutely a correct ha'ara, and therefore the Gemara tells us, and it's quoted in Shulchan Aruch, it's a Gemara in Erev in Daf Peh Amid Beis, and the Shulchan Aruch here in Hilchos Erev Chatzeres tells us that you only need a grogeres l'kol echad ve'echad. Each individual person only needs one grogeres, one date full of matzah, full of challah, and that would be sufficient for the Erev Chatzeres. However, if I count up the 1,000 families, and even though each person only needs a date, it's still going to be more than a box of matzah. So the Gemara there limits it, and the Gemara says, even if you're going to collect a grogeres l'kol echad ve'echad, even if you're going to collect one date size worth of food for each individual family, still, the Gemara says the maximum that you ever have to do is yudches beitzim, the maximum you ever have to do is mazon shtei sudos, is the type, the amount of food that a person will eat in two meals. That would be considered the maximum that you'll ever need, and once you're past that shear, you don't have to add on a grogeres for each and every individual family on their own. What is the din when it comes to Erev Tavshilin? How much must a person have for an Erev Tavshilin? Let's say I'm making an Erev Tavshilin, I have 50 people in my house for Yontif. I have 50 people in my house, I have children or grandchildren. So what would you tell me? Am I mechuyev to make a bigger Erev Tavshilin because now I have more people? So the Gemara says, no, Erev Tavshilin, we're mekel, and we say, afilu kezayis bein la'echad bein la'meyah. You could be ma'ar with an Erev Tavshilin with one kezayis, And that one kazayas is good enough to cover everybody in my home, even though it's 100 people, even though it's 20 people, whoever is in my house, that would be considered covered with the Erev Tavshilin.
Only the one that bakes.
What?
Only the one that bakes. So all you need is one.
Right, all you need is one. No, but let's say everyone's going to do cooking in the kitchen. Let's say everyone's going to be cooking in the kitchen. So what would you say then? So also, we would assume that one kazayas is good enough. In fact, in Shulch... What? Do you have to have...
If I have, let's say, 50 guests, right, or let's say, the Hurricane Sandy, the current Shabbos, 50 guests
right.
In Ireland, right, so I only did the air touchdown for myself.
You mean 3-day on...
Yeah.
Whatever, yeah.
You know what I'm saying, just working right. On the
okay.
And they called in and they want to cook.
Uh-huh.
Would that work, or do you have to have the mine?
Well, the rub makes it for, the rub makes it for everybody in the town if they could bet.
Right.
I was looking at
the one,
like the
problem was, well, is it on the house? Is it on the individual?
It seems like for the whole
room.
I think, I don't know.
We say from the year also.
Right, we do say that. That is the nusach we say. I'm not sure. I think it's. I think we assume that we have in mind anyone who's going to be here for Yontif. I think that's what we assume. And anyone who's not, the Rav already covered... Right before he goes out to shul, the Rav makes an Erev Tavshilin for everybody who forgot to make an Erev Tavshilin. Yeah.
Is it the purpose of the Erev Tavshilin that by my making the Erev Tavshilin, I'm showing that I'm beginning the process of preparing food that I'm now allowed to finish on Erev Shabbos? So it's not that you're going to have to sue
the... Yeah, so the Gemara in the beginning of the second parak in Beitza has 2 days what the point of an Erev Tavshilin is. Is it Mishum Kavod Yantif? Or is it Mishim Kavod Shabbos? Which is a big shaila. If it's because of Kavod Yantif that I should remember on Yantif that I should have some food left over for Yantif, so then that's one qualification that we're going to have to take in mind. If it's for the Kavod of Shabbos, then that's another consideration we're going to have to take in mind. Whatever, the Gemara has that shaila. It's a Machlokes HaMaroim. Anyway, so by Erev Chatzeros, where we're trying to be Mishtatif all the homes into one, so the din is in Shulchan Aruch that a person has to have the Erev Chatzeros in one kli, and it has to be put in one person's home. You can't split up the challahs, you can't split up the matzahs into different homes, because the whole point of the Erev is to show that we're really all living in one house, and therefore they all have to be in one specific place. Now here we're going to get into a fascinating discussion. What happens if my Erev Chatzeros gets eaten up? How long must my Erev Chatzeros be in existence? And how long do we assume that once it's eaten up, how long does a person have until we say that it's usher for him to carry? So, the din is clear in Shulchan Aruch that by Erev Tchumen and Erev Chatzeros, as long as it's there Ben Hashmashos, even if a cat comes and eats it right away after Ben Hashmashos, that would be good enough. Ben Hashmashos is Koveya. That's by both Erev Tavshilin and Erev Chatzeros, which is a little bit surprising, because I would have said that if the whole point of Erev Chatzeros is that a person has to remember, he has to have a heker, that he's together with everybody else, I would have assumed, where's the heker? I had a Ben Hashmashos, but why is that good enough? So this is what we're going to get into a little bit of a discussion about. When it comes to Erev Tavshilin, on the other hand, by Erev Tavshilin, it does not have to be around until Shabbos sets in. You have a 3-day Antif, let's say, and make an Erev Tavshilin that I should be able to cook on Friday afternoon for Shabbos. Over there, we assume as long as it's around on Friday, while I'm doing all the cooking, that's good enough. It could already really be eaten right away once Yantif sets in, and even before then. I don't have to keep it in. Same, yeah, I don't have to keep it that long. So, let's look in Shulchan Aruch in number Aleph. We have in Shulchan Aruch, Simin Shin Samaches, Sif Hey. Says the Mechaber, Im Nisapesh HaPas HaErev V'Nifsal Milechol. Let's say I have an Erev where the food, the Erev Chatzeros, I put bread down, and now the bread, it turns out the bread is so stale that no one would ever eat it in the right mind. So says the Shulchan Aruch, Hareu Kumosha Kala Lugamri, V'tzarech la'arev mechadosh. If I have this bread that gets totally stale and totally inedible, then we assume that a person has to get rid of that, and that cannot serve for him as an heir. V'lachein, says the Ramah, therefore, based on that principle, we assume that's why we picked up the minig to use matzah, she'enim emeheres le'esapish, because this way you can take a box of matzahs, they're not going to get stale, you keep them in the box and in the bag, and nothing's going to happen to them. You don't have to keep renewing the heir if that's good enough. V'od, says the Ramah, di'echolim l'shamra b'imea pesach. Take a box of matzahs that's kasher l'Pesach and use that as your Erev. This way you never have to worry that you're going to have chametz lying around the house before Pesach. V'yecholim lishma ha'erev kal hashana. Says the Ramah, it's good enough to do an Erev once a year. The Acharonim point out even once every 20 years, that's good enough. B'zeh tov yosir mil'arav kol Shabbos v'Shabbos. There is a discussion in the Rishonim, is it better to do an Erev every single Friday afternoon in order that this way everyone should be reminded, or is it good enough to do it once? So over here the Ramah says it's good enough to do it once, and we don't have to be machmir to do it every single Shabbos. So now, if the rabbi goes away and the Erev is in his house, so the rabbi has to leave a key with somebody that we can all access his house. If the rabbi leaves it in his home and we have no access, then it's as if it's not here. Something to keep in mind. That's why it would be important to really find out where the Erev actually is.
I asked Sviakov Stein.
Yeah.
He just told me he thinks in my goodness we'll find out for sure.
Okay. It's an issue. You see, this is why we're learning Hilchos Erev Chatzeres, because apparently a lot of us... What?
You have to have access 24 hours?
You have to have access Shabbos, yeah.
24 hours, so it's locked up in a shul.
No, but you know how to get. You can knock on someone's door to get into the shul. You know how to get there. It's not that you actually listen. The person who's holding on to the Erev. We don't say he has to stay up all night long in case someone knocks on the door and asks for the Erev. We assume as long as people know that that's where their food is found, so that's good enough. So now this is a big chiddush. Why do we assume that if the Erev Truman or the Erev Chatzeres is around Bein Hashmashos, that's good enough for the whole Shabbos? Why? Why should that be the case? I should assume, once it's eaten, so now we no longer have the shituf, we no longer have the connection between all the different members of this community, and we should assume that no longer is there a heter to carry from my home into your home. So what is this all about? This is a big chiddush that we say, hoel v'hutra hutra. This is a big chiddush that we assume that once something becomes mutter, once a status is created, that status continues. Isn't that the law of inertia, if I'm not mistaken? No? Am I wrong? Something that's in motion continues until... What?
Until it comes to rest.
Right, something in motion continues until it stops, right? Until something gets in its way. That's the same over here. Why do I assume, I should assume that the Erev Chatzeres, once Bein HaShemash is hit, and it's in motion, and the Erev Chatzeres is working, and everything's good, I assume that that continues for the rest of Shabbos, and it's not going to be stopped until Shabbos is over. Now, let's look at different cases and figure out whether this is the halacha in all of Hilchos Shabbos, or this is only a special halacha when it comes to Erev Chatzeres and Erev Truman. Let's say, for example, we have a big storm on Shabbos, and the string and the poles fall down from our Tzuras HaPesach.
Don't check it.
Don't check it. But let's say we see, right in front of the shul, the poles fall down. So what would you assume?
No good.
Of course it's no good. There's no shaila. So why don't you say the same over there? Once by Bein HaShemashos we had a good Tzuras HaPesach up, so why don't we assume that should continue through the rest of Shabbos? That's obviously not the case. Let's make no mistake. That's obviously not the case. If the strings and the poles fall down, we assume one is absolutely not allowed to carry on Shabbos. However, by Erev Chatzeres, one would be allowed to carry even if the Erev is eaten after Bein HaShemashos. Yeah?
Where did that go now?
Still clarification.
So Erev Chatzeres
allows from house to house. Is that house for Shurabim also?
Also, yeah. Not Shurabim, house to the street.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
We don't go announcing it. We don't go announcing it.
What?
That if the Erev is down.
If the string falls down?
Only if it's before Shabbos. But if it falls down on Shabbos, you don't go announcing
yeah.
it. You send out shul, we know the shul?
We don't?
No.
What do you mean? If we see right in front of the shul that our...
You would see it. Only
if it's down before Shabbos. Once Shabbos started, it was good.
You don't go around half
and half. Then you assume everyone's a Misasik? I don't know.
Only,
whatever.
Only
no, you can't say a Cheskas Kachos if there's a huge storm and everyone knows that the strings are down.
I'll tell you what happened. Seven years ago, I went to a rabbi in this community. It was a big hurricane.
Right.
A big storm.
Mm-hmm.
It was in Shabbos morning.
Mm-hmm.
And I came at 8 o'clock. I walked into the shul and I asked him, can I rely on the air? And he said to me, has a Chazak for Shabbos.
Yeah, okay. I don't know, whatever. That's not the... There's a separate shaila. My case was, when you have a string in front of the shul, we see it's down.
So then
it's pashut. Right. So that's pashut. So why is that pashut? Why do we assume...
What about the rest? Let the use so it.
Yeah, I really don't know. But... I really know nothing about it. But here, what's the reason why if I see the Arab is down...
Food is symbolic, and
oh.
The Arab is a real
law. Oh, it's a reality. Oh, so here we go. So we're going to get to that, but let's just build this up a little bit and understand it in the context of other halachas of Shabbos. When it comes, let's say, to the Isser of Muktzah on Shabbos, right? So let's think about this for a minute. If I have something that before Shabbos, let's say I have this chair. So before Shabbos, this was a chair. Now on Shabbos, someone comes and whatever, the whole chair falls apart. Some person sits down on it, the whole chair falls apart. So what's the din then? Now it's in a bunch of pieces.
So now it's muktzah.
Why is it muktzah? Why don't you say, Ben Ashmashas, it was mutter, it was a chair. Oh, so the answer is, because now it's no longer a chair. Now, what if I have a different type of case? What if I have this chair, and it's not so fancy? And now on Shabbos, I get a knock on the door, Shabbos afternoon, they tell me, by the way, you are now a multimillionaire, you have won the lottery, and this palace is now yours, and whatever it is, right? They tell me some basura like that. So now I say, what, a millionaire like me is going to sit on a chair like this? I have no use for this chair anymore. So what do you say then? The object didn't change, right? What do you mean? Someone else also has use out of the pieces of the chair when it falls apart.
No, I thought you meant you.
Let's say a chair falls apart.
No, you said you're multiplying the use.
One second. So back up. Let's say the chair falls apart. It's in pieces. So I have no use for it now. But somebody else would have use for all the pieces. They put it back together or whatever. Right?
What's the same chair?
That's not a real Nolan.
What's
the same chair?
The chair now became muktzah. It has no more hishtamshus.
So
now it has no hishtamshus, it's in pieces. But someone could take all the pieces and put them back together after Shabbos.
Oh, okay.
So meaning, I'm just taking that as an example. Someone could use it after Shabbos, but right now, it's no longer the chair that it was before Shabbos, has no use, so therefore it's muktzah. Now what happens if I become a millionaire on Shabbos, and now I have no use for this chair?
Chair's intact.
It's the same chair, but it's very old. I'm not interested in sitting on this uncomfortable chair anymore. So what I'm bringing out from the first, all I'm bringing out from the first case is you don't go after what everyone else does. You go after yourself. For me, it has no use. Take another example. You have a mole who does a bris on Shabbos. So he needs to bring the knife for the bris. So now after the bris is over, he has no use for this knife at all. He's not going to use it to cut his Shabbos food. He's not going to use it for anything else. And he has no other bris. So should we assume, after the bris is over, now the knife becomes muktzah, or should we assume, no, it's the same knife as when Shabbos began. Nothing changed.
It's muktzah because it's a very valuable thing. It's
Machmas Chisaron Kis?
Well, he might have another bris.
He knows he doesn't have another bris.
No, he's very mockery that nobody should use that knife after the bris.
Oh, so that's a separate equation. Let's say it's it's a cheap knife, whatever it is, right? So now I have this Izemel Shel Mila. So the Ramah says, Beferish in Yaradei and Reish Samach Vav, which is in Hilchas Mila. The Ramah says, even after the Mol finishes doing the bris, we assume that the knife is still mutter. Now why?
It's a knife.
It
was the same knife.
Oh, which is the same case as my chair. Even after I became a millionaire and I have no use for this chair anymore, it's still a chair. Bottom line, it's a chair. So that's with regard to the halachas of muktzah. Now, the point basically is, of all that, if you put this together, it seems that if the chavetz is intact, nothing changed. It's the law of inertia. That's exactly what it is. This chair is a chair until it breaks. When Shabbos sets in, Ben Hashmashas is kaveya for the din of muktzah. Is this a chair or is it not a chair? If it was a chair at the time Shabbos began, it will be a chair for the rest of Shabbos, even if I have no use for it. If this was a knife of Mila when Shabbos began, Ben Hashmashas, this is going to be a knife that's mutter for me to carry even after I no longer need it. However, if the chair breaks, or if the knife now breaks, so that's exactly what inertia tells me. Once the motion is now broken, once something is stopped by that inertia, once that motion is no longer as it used to be, once no longer a chair, once that's no longer a knife because it's now in two pieces, so then I assume that the motion has stopped. And Ben Hashmashas is not good enough to continue that motion because that has been stopped by an actual physical change that came into the world. So now, let's look at our two cases that we gave. When we have an Erev with strings and poles around the neighborhood, if that falls down on Shabbos, forgetting about the question whether you should tell other people, let's say I see the Erev is down. So should I assume that now I'm allowed to carry because Ben Hashmashas it was up, we checked it right before Shabbos and everything was fine. Should I assume that Ben Hashmashas was Koveya, that from here on in I'm allowed to continue to carry because Ben Hashmashas told me that there is a Tzuras HaPesach around the neighborhood, I don't care that it fell down later. Answer is no. Why? Because there was a physical break in the walls. These used to be walls, just like you said, these used to be walls around our community. Now the walls are gone. So you can't say that the motion is still continuing. It's not continuing. It stopped. It's a very different type of thing. It's like the chair that breaks into two pieces. However, when I have the Erev Chatzeres, what's the point of the Erev Chatzeres? The point is just to be mishtatev us all together. It's a symbolic act. It's not really anything physical that's happening. We're not doing anything physical. So therefore, if that is there from when Shabbos begins, from Bein HaShemashos, that is good enough for us to assume that the rest of Shabbos, that would be permissible and that would count because there was no serious change in any physical way. My father likes to explain this in another context as well. We assume when a person marries a woman, so now we give that couple a heter ishus. We assume that this couple now is allowed to live together, which also tells us that she is not allowed to live with anyone else, he is not allowed to live with anyone else. There's a heter ishus between this unit, these two people. That heter ishus continues until something comes along and actually breaks it. What does that mean? So, for example, we have a Mishnah in Yevamos, and it's quoted in Shulchan Aruch. If you have a kohen hedyot, she'ires es ha'almana. An almana is mutter to marry a kohen hedyot. A kohen gadol is aser ba'almana. So you have a kohen hedyot who goes ahead, goes out with a girl, she's an almana, and they get engaged. And now, lo and behold, he becomes a kohen gadol. Kohen gadol dies, and they need a bimamana, a new kohen gadol. They say, you're the best for the job. So he's in a little bit of a bind. On the one hand, I'm engaged to this girl. I really want to marry her, but she's an almana. On the other hand, I would love to be a kohen gadol. I've been waiting my whole life to be a kohen gadol. So what should he do? So he's stuck in this dilemma. So the Gemara says, it's a clear halacha psuka that we assume, since he already had a heter ishus with the engagement to this almana, so then we assume that heter just continues along because nothing has actually broken that heter ishus. Something else changed, a side factor changed, that now you became a kohen gadol. But that heter ishus continues on until something actually comes and stops it. However, take an eshes kohen shenensa, for example, you have someone who's engaged to a kohenes, someone who's engaged to a woman, who now goes ahead and is nensa, or you have someone who's married to a woman, who's now nensa, and something physically actually happens to her. There's a shtani gufa, something changes. It's like the eruv falling down, it's like the chair breaking in half. So over there, then we assume that the motion is now stopped. The heter ishus is no longer in play, and we assume that that heter ishus is off. Now, you have to think about, how do we ever say ishus ishus insa? How does the heter ishus go away? Why don't you say every ishus ishus insa should be allowed to stay with her husband because there's inertia? So obviously we don't say that. But we just assume that they're always, that every time you have a heter, what? Regular Yisrael.
Why would that break the ishus?
That's what we're saying. It shouldn't break the ishus. So you have to think about.
Zinsa or
Shenensa? Aisha is Shazinsa. She goes ahead and runs off with somebody else.
So she can't stay with him.
So she's not allowed to stay with him. That we know. But why? 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 Oh, so that's a chiddush. That's a chiddush. That when a woman is mezana, we assume it's a breaking in the ishus.
Yeah.
It's
the same way it's a breaking in the ishus.
Whatever. It's something.
So
something to think about.
Breaking the inertia.
I'm just saying, it's a point to ponder that it means that every time a woman is mezana, she's violating the ishus. It means she's breaking a part of the ishus. Something to think about. What?
She
still need to get, of course, because it's only a partial break of the ishus. What? Right? So once she violates it, so then that heter ishus is off. Yeah. So this comes up, we'll take you for a little bit of a curveball, but again, when it comes to Erev Chatzeres, we have a klal that hol the hutra hutra. Once hol the shtari shtari. Once this situation is considered a mutter situation to carry, we assume that heter continues until we hear otherwise, until something changes. So this is a big question in Hilchos Shabbos. What is the koveya of all the yisurim of Shabbos? It seems to be machlokas harishonim in the beginning of Moed Katan, and the Rashi quotes a machlokas the Rashi and the Maram Rutenberg. But it's a basic question. Should we assume that every minute of Shabbos, you'll understand the Nafkamina in a minute, but should we assume that every minute of Shabbos tells me over and over again, now you have an Isser to do any Yisurim of Shabbos, now again you have an Isser to do any Yisurim of Shabbos, now you have an Isser to do Malacha, every minute we once again have Hashem coming to us and telling us you are not allowed to do Malacha. Or should we assume that when Shabbos sets in, that tells me that once Bein HaShemashos comes, for the next 24 hours, a person is locked in, he's not allowed to do malacha. Now, sounds like a foolish hakir, because what in the world is the difference? It amounts to the same thing. So if you look in the Tshuvas Eretz Tzvi, that's number bays on the surah sheets, I really don't know how it's 5 to 9, and we're only on number bays, but here we go. So if you look in the Tshuvas Eretz Tzvi, Siman Mem Dalet, so the Shuvas Eretz Tzvi is the Kazrig Lever Gon. So he writes as follows. What if a person crosses the date line over Shabbos? Okay? Now we're not going to get into all the specifications of the Shilas of Dateline. We'll get into that another time. But over here, just take this. You have a person who is Mekabel Shabbos. And now he steps, let's imagine that there's such a thing as splitting a landmass, which is a big Machlokes HaPoskim. Can you assume that a dateline splits through a landmass? But let's assume that in the middle of Australia there is a line that tells me if you're on this side of the line, you are
Monday.
You are Shabbos, you're Saturday. If you're on that side of the line, you are Sunday. So let's say you have an individual who is on the Shabbos side, and now, in the middle of Shabbos, he steps over the border. Okay, so here's the Nafkamina. The Avnei Nezer has a Machlokas. You look at number Beis later. The Avnei Nezer has a Machlokas with the Safed Shavu Rebbe. I'm sorry, that was the Avnei Nezer.
Wherever he started from.
What was that? 1 second.
Wherever he started
so the Avnei Nezer, the Safed Shavu Rebbe, has a Machlokas with the Chachan Abba Rebbe. That's a discussion that the Avnei Nezer quotes in his Tshuvas here. You'll see it on Beis. Should we assume that once Bein HaShemashos came in, that told you that for the next 24 hours, you are not allowed to do malacha, and therefore, even if you step over the date line in between, I would still assume that you are asur malacha, even though it's Sunday.
You didn't see sunset.
Or should we assume that every single minute of Shabbos is koveya and isur malacha on you, and therefore, if you happen to step over the date line, so you beat the system. You beat the system. It's okay, you beat the system and you'll figure out where the dateline actually is, but once you step over it, so we assume there is no longer any mechayev of Isurei Shabbos, and one would be allowed to be mechal Shabbos on the other side of the dateline. Similarly, in the Sefer Piskei Tshuva, not to be confused with the Piskei Tshuvos, which is the modern-day Sefer, Piskei Tshuva is a Sefer that was written in Europe, so he quotes there from the Ger Rebbe that he had a suffix. He imagined, he said, let's say you have a person on Yom Kippur who goes, he's af begam leparcha. He couldn't imagine that there's such a thing as an airplane, or, I don't know, he didn't imagine such a thing, but he says, let's say you have someone who somehow flies on Yom Kippur to somewhere else where it's not Yom Kippur anymore. And he goes and he eats.
And he flies back to where Yom Kippur
is. No, he doesn't fly back. He stays there. So should we assume that you're Chayav Karis because you ate on Yom Kippur? It's the same Shiloh. Should we assume that at the outset of Yom Kippur, we assume that is Koveya for the next 24 hours that you have an Isra Achila?
Yom Kippur, it's not a Chiyuv. It's a time issue.
Right.
So if the time changes, so it's no longer the time.
And what about Shabbos?
What
about Shabbos?
Shabbos also is the time.
That's the machlokas. Should we assume, that's one side of the argument. The other side is that no, every single minute tells you.
Well, wait a minute. If you're in a desert and you forgot when it's Shabbos.
Right.
At one point, you knew it was Shabbos, right?
Right.
So then Marcus pick a day, it should be Shabbos.
Right.
Count 6 days, it's Shabbos.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, but why wouldn't you say that from the last time it was Shabbos, it should be Shabbos? If it doesn't break, no, because it's a question of time. It's not a question on you.
So you're saying it's a 24-hour time period. Well, right. Let's say I live in a part of the world. What do you mean? Here, we have sometimes, you can have Shabbos for less than 24 hours. Can you?
Have Shabbos for...
Why can't you? Let's say you live in a country where Shkia is very...
Still 24 hours.
1 second.
Shkia is always going to be...
Good point.
Only if you fly...
So I can never have the case.
Unless you walk.
Right, unless I do this. Yeah.
Many years ago, Rabbi Kluge Prince had written one of his sheets. He used to have a lot of Shabbos. Let's say 4 o'clock here on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Can you send a telegram or can you send a fax to Eretz Yisrael? It's Shabbos Day now.
That's a big Shiloh. That's a big...
Right? Now, that's exactly really what you're talking about.
That...
Now, not physically yourself, but you're doing something that's going to be...
That's not exactly the same. That really comes to a different question. So my father also believes no, and the rationale for that is a little bit different. There's a Gemara in Shabbos on Yud Zayin Amud Beis, where the Gemara has a discussion on Machlokes Beis Shammai Beis Hillel, do we have an Isser of Shvisas Kelim and Shabbos? Should we assume that not only am I not allowed to do Malacha, but also my Kelim are not allowed to do Malacha on Shabbos? The Gemara comes out, Lamaskana like Beis Hillel, that Shvisas Kelim is Mutter B'Shabbos. There is no Isser Shvisas Kelim on Shabbos. So, based on that simple understanding of the Gemara, I would assume that what? Shvisas Kelim is Mutter, therefore I'm allowed to set a Shabbos clock because I don't have any Isser for my Kelim to do Malach on Shabbos as long as I am not involved. Right? That's what everyone would assume. In fact, the Gemara there is talking about a situation post Gemayim Lagina. The Gemara says, if I turn on the sprinkler before Shabbos, and now while Shabbos is going, everything's in motion, my factory's running, and everything's fine. So the Gemara assumes over there, like Bis Hillel, that post Gemayim Lagina, one is allowed to do Malacha as long as he's not involved, as long as his Kalim are doing everything on their own, I would assume that that is Mutter. So until about 50 years ago, that was the simple explanation of the Gemara. Everyone thought that was the Pshat. Then there was a Pirush of the Rambam on Maseches Shabbos that was printed, where the Rambam says, no, Beis Hillel never said that's Mutter. Beis Hillel only said it's permissible when you started all the motions before Shabbos began. When, for example, you turn on the sprinkler system before Shabbos, and now it's going to continue into Shabbos. Or, I put my shirt into a bucket of dye, and it already started, all the process already started before Shabbos, but now it's going to continue on Shabbos as well. That's the only time Beis Hillel says it's Mutter. However, to begin something on Shabbos, to start a malacha on Shabbos, even Beis Hillel never allowed for that. Therefore, Rav Moshe writes in a tshuva that he thinks Shabbos clocks are not permissible.
Unless
he's
an only
cook.
No.
But you said it before Shabbos.
You said it, but it's off.
It goes off every day at 7 o'clock.
Once you said it,
every single day goes off for a minute at
7 o'clock.
No, that's not set. You're not.
It goes off.
Once you said it, it starts. The clock stops going again, and it's in motion.
But the lights are off. The malacha of havara is not happening.
It doesn't matter, but the process already started before Shabbos.
So it depends what process. Depends what's happening. If, let's say, I turn on my sprinkler system and I say, I only want it to go on at 6 o'clock in the morning on Shabbos morning. That wasn't in motion before Shabbos. Even though the clock was going, the sprinkler wasn't going. So therefore, Rav Moshe assumes that it's usher for a person to use a Shabbos clock on Shabbos. Whatever, he comes out, whatever, you have southern...
Your heat, so you have...
Your heat system that has a thermostat shouldn't also be allowed then.
We have a lot of discussion, maybe for another time, but basically Rav Moshe picks up on that Rambam and he talks about this case when a person actually did not start the malacha before Shabbos. The whole malacha is being started on Shabbos itself. Based on this Pirush HaMishnayis, we should assume that the malacha would be prohibited in such a case. And based on that, some contemporary poskim say as well that one is not allowed to send a fax to Eretz Yisrael or to leave a message on a machine in Eretz Yisrael once it's already Shabbos, because we should assume that there's an Isser Shvisas Kalim if the malacha is being started on Shabbos. Now, there's a whole question about that, because why...
It's your Kalim. Your Kalim.
It's not my Kalim, it's his Kalim. But what do you mean? You're still making his Kalim work. Okay, so
you're starting it over here. It's already done, the process.
Yeah, so it's a...
Then the electricity, the system thing.
Takes over, right. And especially... Especially now...
On the sprinkler system on Erev Shabbos.
Exactly. Especially, your question's even compounded more, because especially now, when emails go, let's say, to China, they're not going to Eretz Yisrael, they're in cyberspace. So you can't say that when I send an email on Shabbos, it's going to Eretz Yisrael. It's not. What do you mean? If the person happened to be in China, he would pick up my email also. So it's a complicated story, and maybe we will spend some time on it at another point.
Another question, I mean, I think we had this one. If you're sitting at a computer here in New York, mm-hmm. and you're ordering something from a website in Eretz Yisrael,
right?
And it's Shabbos in Eretz Yisrael,
mm-hmm.
but the guy's website is.
You should have come to the discussion last year.
Right, so that was the first year I ever gave on Wednesday night in the White Shul. B&H Photos. So
B&H
Photos closes the website on Shabbos. So that was the whole question. Should we assume that there's an Isser, Mekach U'Memkar B'Shabbos B'Shei Baal Tasa? Does that Isser apply, or does that Isser not apply when there's actually no transaction happening? Everything's happening on its own.
But when they close it for Shabbos, somebody who's in Chal Shabbos, in Eretz Yisrael, could be ordering it from here, and it's Friday still.
No, on B&H website they close it down for the whole time.
They close up for 36
hours. Yeah, they do. They do. It's actually very interesting. They actually do. Okay, so.
At
Erev.
On Erev. Right. So maybe it's different than the quantifiers or the Shabbos of each minute being a separate minute. Maybe it's an entire.
Maybe.
But that question, we know, you get on a plane, I guess coming this way would be better.
Right.
If you come this way, on Kippur,
You go the other way. You go the other way.
Right, you were 6 hours ahead, you get off the plane, it's no longer Tisha B'Av.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so now what do you do?
It's like walking over
though. Right.
Is there a halakhic date line, or it's the international date line that's been made by
the international committee? Yeah, that's
is there
is a halakhic date line. Yeah, that's part of the big question. Where is the halakhic date line? The big machlokes, Rabbi Chaim Michel Tuvichinsky, the Chazon Ish. It became a big question when the Mir Yeshiva was in Japan. So did they have to do 2 days of Yom Kippur? That was when it became a big shaila. And this is when the Chazon Ish actually became famous, was over that shaila. Because people told the Chazon Ish he has to send a psak muchlat about Yom Kippur. And apparently that's when he became famous over his incredible tshuva that he wrote about the dateline in Yom Kippur for the Mir Yeshiva in Japan. That was the famous thing for the Chazon Ish. What? They did not keep 2 days. So he explained why not. Okay, so let's move on. So what do you do if you have an individual in the Erev, in our community, who forgot to be a part of the Erev? What do we do in such a case? When Bein HaShemash was set in, he didn't have a mind, or for whatever reason, he's not included in the Erev. So what do we do about such a case? So it says in Shulchan Aruch that if even one person, the Gemara in Samach Tesam and Beis and Erevin writes that even if one person in this community does not want to be Mishtatev in the Erev, all of us are also to carry. Everybody here is considered usher to carry, so we have to be very careful that everyone has a mind to be mishtatef in the Erev. Now, look at Shulchan Aruch Simon Shin Pei Sif Aleph, which is number Gimel. The Shulchan Aruch writes as follows, Echad mibnei achatzer sheshachach velo irvim acherim, oser aleihem, quoting the Gemara in Erev and Samachtes, ma takanasem, what should a person do? Yevatel am reshuso. Person should be mevatel his reshus to everybody else. He should say, my house is not really mine, it now belongs to the whole community for halachic purposes, obviously. Right. So the Shulchan Aruch then says, Yachal levatel af misha techshach. Person is even allowed to be mevatel his reshus, even after Bein HaShemashos, even after it gets dark outside. Now, why should that be the case? Why shouldn't we assume that there's an Isser of Mekach u'Memkar b'Shabbos? One is not allowed to do a transaction on Shabbos. So why is it permissible for a person who forgot to be mishtatev in the Erev to be mevatel his reshus on Shabbos? This is a very strong question. Make it hefker.
Why is that business?
Very good. So 1 second. So the Mishnah Berurah writes, the reason why it's not considered a business, it's not Mekach u'Memkar, because this is not a transaction, this is just Silik Reshuso.
It's one-sided.
It's ownerless. So that's a question. So let's get into this here. What do you do with Hefker on Shabbos? How do we look at Hefker? Let's say, for example, you have a person who finds chametz in his house on Pesach. So what should he do? So can I say, I'm being mafker? Is a person allowed to do that on Yom Tov?
No.
It's mine. Let's say a guy...
Once Pesach comes at the chametz, you have no bias on that chametz.
Okay, so a guy comes and drops off chametz in my house on Pesach. Whatever. It's in my rishus. Right, so the Torah puts it into my rishus. So what do I do? Should you say that... I mean, obviously I should be mafkir it, right? What else am I supposed to do?
The Torah says if you cover it and you wait till...
And then you burn it. Right. So is a person allowed, there's a discussion in the Rishonim in the beginning of Pesachim, is a person allowed to be mafkir on Shabbos or not? Can he be mafkir his chametz? Now the Meiri discusses in his Sefer Magin Ha'avos, which is a very interesting Sefer that the Meiri wrote, which is basically defending a lot of the Minhagim from his community. That's why it's called Magin Ha'avos. He's defending the Minhagim from his ancestors. So the Meiri writes over there, as well as in Shabbos Daf Kuf Chav Zayin, he has this question. And he says that when a person makes... let's say, Hefker on Shabbos, so we assume that it's mutter for one to be mafker something on Shabbos. That is not under the rubric of Mekach u'Memkar. That's not a transaction. Hefker is really ownerless. Hefker is not considered like we're all the bailam over it together. It's not like I'm giving over my property to everybody. It's that I'm giving over my property to nobody. So that's why we would assume that Hefker on Shabbos would be permissible. In fact, Rabbi Kiva Eger brings a raya to this principle. Rabbi Kiva Eger and Aruch Chaim Siman Yud Gimel brings a riot, because the Gemara says in the end of Masechta Shabbos that Rabbi Lazar holds that not only is one allowed to perform certain mitzvahs on Shabbos, even Machshiri Mila are also Dochas Shabbos. Ask the Gemara. So why don't you tell me also that Machshiri Tzitzis are Dochas Shabbos? Or Machshiri Mezuzah are Dochas Shabbos? Let a person go ahead and write a mezuzah on Shabbos, let him go ahead and tie his Tzitzis on Shabbos, why can't he do that? So the Gemara says, no, Ibai Machile Lebigdo, Ibai Machile Lebeso. A person could get up on Shabbos and say, I'm not interested in this house, and then he's pater from mezuzah. Or a person could get up on Shabbos and say, I don't want this beged, and then he's pater from the mitzvah of tzitzis. So from the fact that a person could be mafkir his beged or his house, therefore we assume that machshirei mezuzah and machshirei tzitzis are not tocha Shabbos. Says Rabbi Akiva Eger, you see from there that one would be allowed to make something hefker on Shabbos. That's exactly what the Gemara is talking about. And the Gemara says that it's mutter to make something hefker. So that's also the background of why it's permissible for a Naira situation, where you have a person who forgot to be mishtativ in the Erev, and now he would like to be mishtativ in the Erev, but it's already Shabbos. Shabbos already set in. So the Shulchan Aruch says he's allowed to be mevatel his rishus to others. Why is he allowed to be mevatel his rishus? Why isn't that an isra of mekach u'memkar? So the answer is because there is no gzera of mekach u'memkar when it comes to the bitul rishus, because that's just hefker, and hefker is considered owner list.
And then, if he does that, he then can carry or not?
Yes. Yes, so you're saying, you weren't a part of it, ben ashmashas. Right. Correct? That's what you're asking? So the answer is that you weren't a part of it, ben ashmashas, but now I'm as if I don't answer. I'm not here. It's the same way a guest who comes into town is mutter to carry because he's not one of the players. He's not one of the factors of our community. So to this individual, he doesn't have a house anymore. So if he doesn't have a house, he has no possibility of answering. Let's just talk about one last... Let's just talk about...
Why is there a problem here?
So now in our communities where we have Zachan La'adam Shalo B'fanav, right, back in the days when everyone used to drop off a challah, so this was a problem. But now that we have Zachan La'adam Shalo B'fanav, so everyone's included anyway. But what if you have one guy who says, I don't want to be a part of the Erev? What do you do with that Meshuggah? Shoot him. Shoot him. Almost, in the Ramad says, Kofanosa Afila Bar Karcha. So, pretty much.
Now, how do you tell the person, like there are people today in every community, this one too, I'm sure, they don't hold, now it's different, they don't hold from the Arab Chassid, they don't hold from the Arab Turks, but they don't carry on Shabbos.
Right.
Does that mean that they also are being the Arab Chassid? Because you don't need the Arab Chassid, if you don't hold from the Arab,
right, you can't carry anyway.
You can't carry anyway.
Right.
And the Arab Chassid is not doing
right.
Any good.
So all the Arab Chassid is doing is saying that we're all shutvim together. We're all shutvim together. You choose not to carry. That's your issue. But the point of the Erev Chatzeres is just to say that we're all as if we live in one house. So the only problem is if a person gets up and says b'feirush, I don't want to be a part of it. If he says that I don't want to be a part of it, then he asers. Then no one's allowed to carry.
If he's not religious.
So we're going to talk next week about all this is talking about in a situation where the Jews live in a ghetto and it's all nice from a yidden living together. So that's what we're talking about. These are all the steps you take. Now, next week we're going to talk about what do you do when you have irreligious Jews living in the community, and what do you do when you have non-Jews living in the community. For example, a person goes to a hotel, you can't assume, unless there's a program that's taking over the whole hotel, but generally you can't assume that every single person inhabiting this hotel is a Jew, is an Orthodox Jew. You probably can't assume that. So we'll have to figure out what to do in such a case. Let's just end off with one short other piece over here, and that is the following. The Gemara says in Brachos, before we get to the Dvar Torah, the Gemara says in Brachos, Daf Lamed Tes Amud Beis, which is number Dalid. So the Gemara says, Ravami Varavasi, once they had an Erev Chatzeres, and once it was in their house, so they used to use it to make Hamotzi Lechem in Aretz on Shabbos. Why? Because they said, Hol V'Neved Ba Mitzvah Chada, once we did one mitzvah with it, so why not elevate it and do a second mitzvah? So number one, we did the mitzvah of Erev Chatzeres. Number two, we're going to use it for our Shabbos meal. Now this is Paskin and Shulchan Aruch in Shin Sadi Dalet Siv Beis and Ochos Erevin, that one should try to eat the Erev after he uses it for Erev Chatzeres, because that will be a Hol V'Neved B'Mitzvah Chada, since he did one mitzvah with it, so he may as well go ahead and do another. So I just want to give a few cases where this comes up as well. In the Mishnah Berurah, he quotes in Ochos Havdalah and Reish Sadi Zayin, that we have the practice of taking the Hadassim from our Dalad Minim on Sukkot, and using those for Besamim, as long as they smell good, using those for Besamim throughout the year also, because of Hol V'Neved B'Mitzvah Chada, so we may as well do another mitzvah. In fact, the Torah writes, you have it on number Hey, the Torah writes that he thinks a Smach L'davar is, it says, Kol Shamar Shabbos Mechalalo, and right next to that pasuk is, Tachas Hasirpad Yale Hadas. So there's some sort of Smichas HaParshis, which tells me that you should use the Hadasim from Sukkot for the Besamim on Matzah Shabbos. Third, the Rama writes in Tafrei Samach Dalid that we have the minhag to take the Hoshanas and throw them into the fire for the Afiyas Hamatzos, the Rama says. Because again, you're doing one mitzvah with them on Sukkot, you may as well do another mitzvah with them on Pesach. That goes. Maimini writes that he had the minhag in his neighborhood to use the stems of the Arava for Kulmas for a Sefer Torah, to use it as the quill for the writing of Sefer Torah, Tefillin, and Mezuzah. And one last example, which is fascinating, is the Tshuva in the Tashbetz, where he writes that the same Edim that you use for the Edei Kiddushin, you should also use for the Edei Nisuin. A person should have the same Edim for both, I'm sorry, for the Edei Ksuba. The Edim that I use for the Edei Aksuba, he says if you're doing the Ksuba and the Kiddushin one after the other, you should use the same Edim, because once I did one mitzvah with them, I should also use them for another mitzvah. So there's a whole discussion, what about tzitzis and what about other things? Okay, so there is room to think about this. What if a person has a toss-up? For example, I have the choice to either use my old schach that I've been using the last 20 years, which is Hal v'Neved b'Mitzvah Chada. I used it last year for the mitzvah, I used it the year before, now let me use it again. Or, should Hiddur Mitzvah trump that? Should I assume that I should go ahead and buy beautiful new schach that's going to be so pretty, my family's going to love it, it's going to smell so good, wherever it is. So should I assume that it's better to do Hiddur Mitzvah? Or should I assume that it's better to use a mitzvah item more than once? So lechari, you could bring a raya to this from the Rama. The Rama writes himself in Siman Tav Reish Nun Dalet and Hilchos Dalet Minim that a person should go ahead and buy new aravos every day of Sukkos. That's what the Rama says, because aravos very easily wither away. The Rama says a person should go ahead and buy new aravos every single day of Sukkos. Why? What do you mean? I used these yesterday. I used them the day before. So hal the neved ban mitzvah chada. Since I did one mitzvah, why not go ahead and do another mitzvah? Answer is, Hiddur mitzvah trumps Hal v'Neved b'Mitzvah Chada. So that should be the same thing when we come to schach. If a person has a choice between Hiddur mitzvah or Hal v'Neved b'Mitzvah Chada, probably Hiddur mitzvah would take precedence. So now, when it comes to eating the Erev Chatzeres, when is a person allowed to eat the Erev Chatzeres? So the general practice is that a person should not eat it until the Sudas Hayom, until the morning meal on Shabbos morning. Why is that? So the Achronim point out, because possibly we have a concern that someone is going to make Shabbos early, and he's going to come home, and right away, Chaparayin is going to go and eat his matzahs from the Erev Chatzeres, and he's not even going to realize that it's not even Ben Hashmashos yet. And if his Erev Chatzeres wasn't there Ben Hashmashos, he's not allowed to eat, he's not allowed to carry for the rest of Shabbos. So therefore,
you have to eat Erev Chatzeres every Shabbos, then, if you're eating it.
For sure. My father always likes to say about the guy who lived in our building, who was a little half-sleeping all the time, so he used to come down every Friday afternoon, every Friday night, and say, and knock on the door and say, oh, I forgot to buy Lechem Mishnah, can I take some matzahs from the Erev? Now, you're not allowed to say no to him, because officially they belong to him, just like they belong to you. And my father said every week they had to buy a new box of matzahs for the Erev, because this guy always used to forget. Yeah.
I went walking before, went across the street to that brother, because I figured I would eat somebody
that could know. So let's just finish.
Across the street, Rabbi Reisman's
office. Oh.
And he could tell now he's Magistral. He gave me the name of the two people there in the shul that had the key.
Okay, so we should hang up a sign. Ashokara. So let's talk just one last thing. What about the Erev Tavshilin? So when do we have the minute to eat the Erev Tavshilin?
The whole community.
Shabbos. I think generally people eat it Shabbos morning, right? By the Shabbos morning meal, people generally eat it. Now this is a very strange practice. Why do we wait to eat the Erev Tavshilin until Shabbos morning? The Erev Tavshilin only has to be around until you're finished cooking on Friday afternoon, so really we should eat it Friday night. So where'd this minute come from to eat the Erev Tavshilin on Shabbos morning? So in fact, the Mishnah Brura writes that you can even eat it Pesudas Halayla, but I assume the reason why we eat it Shabbos morning is that you shouldn't confuse it with the Erev Chatzeres, that the same way we have this gather by Erev Chatzeres, that we try not to eat it Friday night because a person might make a mistake in case he makes early Shabbos, and he's not going to have Ben Hashmashos. He's not going to have his matzahs or his chalos in the world. So therefore, we tell him not to eat it until Shabbos morning. So too, when it comes to the Erev Tavshilin, I think we would make the same gather, and that's why the minig has become, the minig has developed, although the Mishnah Berurah writes not like this, the minig has developed that we don't eat the Erev Tavshilin as well until the Shabbos morning meal. Sorry it's a little bit late, and hopefully next week we will finish up on maybe our last, or maybe not, of the series on Erev Chatzeres. Just a quick vart on the back, on the Parsha, Parsha's bow. So we have a famous pasuk where Moshe Rabbeinu says, Ka chatzos halayla ani yotze b'tzoch Mitzrayim. Moshe Rabbeinu tells Paro that he's going to come out around chatzos. Says Rashi, why does Moshe Rabbeinu say Hashem is going to come around chatzos and follow through with the Makas Bechoros? What's that all about? So Rashi says, because maybe the Tzadkinim and Paro are going to make a mistake. Maybe the astrologers are not really going to be precise with the timing. And then they're going to say, Moshe Badaihi. Moshe is a fool. You see, he was wrong. So think about this. What kind of mistake are they going to make? So there's two options. So Lamda Shavar. What? There's two options. Either they're going to make a mistake, and it's going to happen at 11:59, and they're going to be looking at their watches. Oh, it's 11:59. Moshe Rabbeinu said 12 o'clock. You see, he's wrong. That's a possibility. Well, every single Bechor Mitzrayim just got killed. So you're going to say Moshe Rabbeinu is a fool because it happened at 12 o'clock? I'm sorry, it happened at 11:59 instead of 12? So that can't be, right? Can't be the mistake. So what's going to happen? They're going to be sitting and waiting around 11:58, 11:59, 12 o'clock. You see, 12 o'clock struck. And
here I am.
Here I am. Everyone's still alive. Wait one more minute. So now what? So now Moshe Rabbeinu is right.
Well, that 1 minute, he was wrong.
So what exactly is going to happen? When are they going to say Moshe Rabbeinu is a fool?
That 1 minute.
So you're going to have to say, for that 1 minute, from the wait, from 12 o'clock till 12:01, they're going to say Moshe Rabbeinu is a fool. Do we care? For that 1 minute, do we care what in the world they're going to say? They're wrong! In 1 minute, half of the country is going to be killed out. So we have to worry about what they're going to say for 1 minute? The answer is absolutely yes. If you look about the fourth paragraph, so it says, "Kamosha Mansino Maisaber Baruch Ber." It says a story about Rabbi Baruch Ber that one time he was sitting in a shir, there was a guest lecturer speaking in the town, and Rabbi Baruch Ber needed to excuse himself for a minute. So he put his hat down on the shtender and he walks out to the bathroom. So he comes back, and he told one of the Talmidim after he came back that the reason he left his shtender on the chair is because he was concerned the person shouldn't even think for 1 minute that I didn't like what he said and then I'm walking out on him. I don't want him to have hard feelings for 1 minute. I am going to come back. In 30 seconds, I'll be right back where I was. And he's not going to feel bad. No, but for those 30 seconds, the person has to be careful not even to give off the impression that he's doing something that might hurt somebody. You're going to come back in a minute and everything will work out. Doesn't matter. Person has to be careful for every little detail of what he does and make sure that everything is done kedasu kedin and no one could possibly make a mistake. If you look in the next paragraph, there's another story about Rabbi Baruch Ber, but basically, we have to be careful as well. Moshe Rabbeinu himself, he's telling them that there's a tremendous nace that's going to happen, and everyone's going to be shocked, and no one's going to know what hit them, and Mitzrayim's going to be falling to pieces over it. But still, for that 1 minute of mistake, for that 1 minute of them making fun of Moshe Rabbeinu, the whole thing's not worth it. And we find the same is by Dasan Vaviram. What happened? Dasan Vaviram put aside some of the man, even though Moshe Rabbeinu said don't. So what happens? So we know that the ofos came, the Medrash tells us that the birds came, and they eat up the man that Dasan Vaviram left over. Now, think about it. How much man fell down in the Midbar every single day? There were pounds and pounds of man every day. Imagine it was this high. It was man. So what happens? You have two wise guys. Even if they're collecting for 2 weeks before, right? How much can they possibly collect? How much man can they possibly collect? Two people. One pile, two piles, whatever. You think they could possibly collect enough man that it could pile up as much as it would pile up on a regular day? So what's going to happen? Shabbos morning, everyone's going to wake up and look out the window and say, oh, Moshe Rabbeinu is wrong because there are two piles of man right outside the doors of Dasan Aviram. Oh, you see, Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't know what he's talking about. Moshe Rabbeinu said no man is going to fall on Shabbos and look outside of the doors, there's two piles of man. Anyone in their right mind is going to say such a thing? So the answer is, so why did Hashem have to bring the birds to make a miracle that all the man should be eaten up, that no one should say anything? The answer is because even for that one fool who's going to think for 1 second that something's wrong, that Moshe Rabbeinu made a mistake, the whole thing's not worth it. So the Ribbono Shel Olam would rather bring a miracle onto the world, he would rather bring the birds to come and eat up all the man to make sure that no one, even for 1 second, has a question about the validity of Moshe Rabbeinu's statements, about the power of the Ribbono Shel Olam and Moshe Rabbeinu who brought that through. And that is something that we can take out from the story of Bachatzos HaLaila Ani Yotzei B'Soch Mitzrayim. I wish everyone a wonderful rest of the week.